caring for your four-legged friend. People love their pets, and some will even tell a lie for their pet. A new poll of 2,000 pet owners shows that one quarter of pet owners have lied to their boss about taking their dog or cat to the vet. And 39% admitted taking the day off work to care for their pet. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Even though people will take extreme measures to keep their pets happy and healthy, usually it just takes some knowledge and regular care. Our panel of veterinarians are here to help you answer those care questions. We will also discuss seasonal issues such as ticks and Lyme disease, and how to look out for allergies in your feline or canine friend. Veterinary expertise on Maine Calling today, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Pets can bring a lot of joy into our lives, but they also can bring worry and unwanted expenses. Today, I'm joined by three veterinarians to get some advice about how to best care for your family's four-legged friend. In the studio with me, Dr. Deirdre Frey. She owns and operates Vet at Your Door. Dr. Kate Domenico, a veterinarian at Cape Veterinary Clinic. And Dr. Megan Vaught, a criticalist at the Maine Veterinary Medical Center. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about caring for your pet? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all three of you. Kate, I'll start with you. Wet spring, this means lots of ticks, doesn't it? Seeing a lot of dogs coming in with tick bites?
Yes, absolutely. Now that the preventatives are getting better and better, there's now formulas, and topical formulas, and the drugs to prevent flea and tick bites are getting better and better.
Okay, so if a dog is on this, on one of them, will the tick not even bite, or will it bite and fall off?
Usually if it's a tablet format, then the tick will bite and then fall off.
Okay, and no Lyme disease or
Correct.
Any of the other diseases we're worried about with animals?
The claim from the companies is for Lyme disease, because there's a certain duration of time that the tick needs to be attached to the animal in order to spread diseases. There are some diseases that are spread potentially in the time that it takes. So the best thing that clients, pet owners can do is check their pet for ticks and try to remove them immediately from when they come in from their hike or outdoor adventures.
So if your animal either has not been treated, or you're maybe not 100% sure if you've been doing the treatment every single month like you're supposed to and gets bit, is there a treatment once a dog's been diagnosed? Do they respond well?
Yes, absolutely. So there are a multitude of treatments, most likely doxycycline, which is an antibiotic that's used to treat Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. Obviously, you have to go to your veterinarian to be diagnosed, and there's blood work that incurs, and that's how we diagnose it. And most dogs respond very well to the treatment.
Okay. I'm going to turn to you, Deirdre, with another thought for the season. We're talking about allergies. Dogs and cats can have allergies?
They absolutely can. They usually manifest their allergies instead of us, like how we get hay fever.
So not sneezing and running eyes?
Not usually. They usually manifest it through their skin, actually. So you'll notice that your dog is itching a lot, or kind of breaking with a skin rash of some kind. And that's usually, or can be, due to an allergy. So either in the environment or sometimes food related as well. But at this time of year, I definitely see a lot of skin cases, and it's usually due to an environmental allergy.
What kind of things are dogs usually allergic to, or cats?
They're allergic to a lot of the same things that we are. Certain things that are flowering, pollen, you know, that sort of thing, they can be allergic to. They can also be extremely allergic to flea bites as well. So if they aren't protected, a lot of times at this time of year, it'll also be a flea allergy as well.
So let's say my dog's allergic to ragweed or birch pollen or something like that. What does one do? Are there antihistamines? Are there antihistamines for dogs?
So you can give dogs. I mean, you always want to ask a veterinarian doses and what kinds, because there are a lot of different options. But yes, antihistamines can help. Sometimes there are a lot of new medications now that can really help with allergies and just sort of cutting off that immune response without many side effects, which is nice.
All right. Well, I want to bring you into the conversation, Megan. You're a criticalist. So sort of like a specialist, an ER doc, how would you describe, what is a criticalist in the veterinary world?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of it is the sickest of the sick. So I did do a residency with both emergency and critical care. And so it kind of just bridges both of those teams together and really specializing mostly in those truly emergent and critical situations coming in the door. So the sickest, the ones that need kind of those itty bitty things that are kind of triggering their cardiovascular system or their neurologic system, and they need a little bit of support on the finest detail.
So do you see different things with different seasons, or is it everything all the time?
I think some of it definitely is seasonal. Like now that it's warming up, we have a lot more trauma. We have a lot more of pets getting into the road and getting hit by cars. We are having a lot more toxicity. For whatever reason, I feel like we're having a lot of that right now as a springtime, early summer thing too, that people are out and about and they are doing more things in the woods, or we're kind of dealing with those sorts of things.
So you say in the woods, what can animals get in? Is it mushrooms and things like that? What do they get into in the woods that are bad news?
Mushrooms, other people's recreational objects like marijuana and things like that that's left behind from camping or whatnot can certainly be eaten. We've had, you know, massive drug toxicities if people are not keeping their stuff kept away and they're out camping, certainly. Or they're just playing with fetch with a stick, and that can certainly impale their chest or go down their throat and really cause major injuries.
Megan, I know you wanted to talk about some of the specific advancements in treatment and diagnostics. So what can you do now that we couldn't even do a few years ago for dogs and cats?
Yeah, I think we have had a lot of advancements as far as having simple tests that we can very quickly give us a little bit more information. And so a lot of our triage blood work or clotting tests, things like that, can give you a lot of very specific information in seconds, and it can make a very world of a difference for that patient's stability and for the family and the loved one, for sure. We have other kind of reversal agents for certain drugs or toxicities or intralipid, like fat, basically, that we would give intravenously to help with major marijuana toxicities or other medications, like if your family member's on blood pressure medication, your dog eats the entire bottle of it, then we can really intervene very, very quickly.
It sounds like that's something you've seen happen.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. Unfortunately, but thankfully you have those methods or those things at your fingertips, and you can intervene very, very quickly.
All right. Well, if you have a question for our veterinarians, our phone number 1-800-399-3566 and 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to start with a question from our producer, Jonathan Smith. He says that his dog eats dirt, and he wants to know if that's normal, if that's okay. And I know it's tempting to have sort of a joke answer for Jonathan, but why does a dog eat dirt, and is it okay? Kate?
Typically, I see this very commonly in a lot of my patients that they eat dirt, and I don't know what it is. There's a medical term called pica, and it actually occurs in people as well. Not that a lot of people eat dirt, but dogs eat dirt, and the risks are is that they can get gastrointestinal parasites from it. There's lots of wildlife that traipses through your yards, and of course, therefore defecates or leaves other creatures that may be deceased in your lawn and in the dirt, and that's where they harbor these parasite eggs. And when they eat the dirt, they can contract the gastrointestinal parasite. So that's our biggest concern.
So
obviously,
if your dog
we'll put
does
compost
it?
Too.
Oh yeah, compost.
Yeah.
So if your dog eats dirt or compost, do you just keep an eye on them for certain kinds of symptoms? What do you
do? Well, dirt, yes. Compost, different story. They can become very, very sick from the compost.
Oh.
So if it's just plain dirt without any, you know, fertilizers or anything else in it, and it's a small amount, again, the next step would be to have fecal tests. But if your dog does it every single day, you know, over a course of time, maybe they're going to develop signs of diarrhea. It just depends on the frequency and the amount that they're eating.
This is related to, I know, is a very common question. Why does my dog eat grass? I know that there's sort of like, I don't know, is this an urban myth that dogs eat grass to make themselves throw up? Is that why? Do you know, Deirdre?
I think sometimes yes. I do think it indicates sometimes that, you know, that they do have some stomach upset, that their stomach is hurting them and they're trying to make themselves feel better. And I don't know exactly the mechanism or inside their brains why they're doing that, but I think they definitely do seem, there seems to be an association with not feeling well and eating grass. And some dogs are just like goats and they just eat grass. But some dogs, you know, it really is sort of a sign that they're not feeling well in their belly.
Yeah, my dog, when she was young, she loved the spring grass, the bright green, brand new grass, and would sneak away from us and munch on it really quickly. And
yeah, they are omnivores, so they like their vegetables too, I guess.
We have a message from Aaron. Does spaying or neutering dogs cause them to gain weight and have a shorter lifespan? I have read that specifically with golden retrievers, the kinds of dogs I own, spaying and neutering is part of the reason their lifespans are considerably shorter than they were a couple decades ago. If a dog has no access to another unaltered dog, is it healthier to leave them intact?
That's a very good question, and there's kind of two parts to it. I would say that you can prevent a lot of diseases by spaying and neutering your dog, namely in a or cat. Mainly in a male, it would be testicular cancer, prostate issues, and in a female, mammary cancer, ovarian cancer. Those type of things are removed as risks once you're spaying and neutering your dog or cat. But on the flip side of that, there are some negatives, and one of them is that their metabolism decreases probably about 50%, maybe a little bit less than that, once we're removing those reproductive organs. It has to do with just the hormonal component of that they're delivering and how the metabolism functions as a result of that.
Okay, anything to add? Go ahead.
And from an emergency standpoint, intact female dogs are certainly at a higher risk for developing an infection in their uterus called a pyometra. And so that can end up in our door, certainly if they're severely ill and wind up kind of, for lack of a better way of describing it, developing pus accumulating in your uterus. And it can be open or closed, meaning that it's trapped and can't be released out through the normal tracts of their reproductive system. And so they're can be at a major risk for truly rupturing and becoming very severely ill.
So what are the risks of the, I can't remember what
pyometra,
or the cancers that spaying and neutering help prevent? Are these risks something that 2% of pets may get, 10%, 50%?
For female dogs that are unspayed or that are intact, every heat cycle they go through increases their risk of mammary cancer by like 15% or so, give or take the individual. Some of it, certainly as you get older, obviously those percentages jump up much larger each season. Whereas like if you were a year old, then that percentage is much smaller. As far as it truly developing that infection, it seems very variable, but you're at a much higher risk the more times your uterus goes through a progesterone cycle, and then they can certainly develop an infection there.
Okay, we'll go to Lou, who's calling from Kingfield, Maine. Hi, Lou, go ahead.
I'm wondering, I have a pretty common question. What is the best home remedy to treat dogs with diarrhea?
Great question. So what I always tell people when their dog is having diarrhea is actually just to give their guts a little bit of a break. So to just, you know, not feed them for about 12 hours. And then it's best to kind of give very, very bland food. So I always recommend some boiled chicken and rice or boiled hamburger and rice. You know, nothing added to it, no oils, no salt and pepper or anything like that, just plain. And then to add a little bit of canned pumpkin for some fiber to that. So not pumpkin pie. I had a pet owner give pumpkin pie to their dog, but just the actual canned pumpkin that you'll find at the store, and add like a teaspoon or two to their meal as well, just to help bulk up that stool. That can really help.
All right. Good luck, Lou. That's Lou in Kingfield. We'll go to Haley calling from Portland. Hi, Haley. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I've recently become more passionate about adopting or rescuing dogs versus breeding. And I know there's a lot of breeders in the area. And I wondered if from a professional standpoint, you folks had an opinion on that.
Interesting question.
It's a very good question, and I'm glad that you're, you know, reaching out for different options prior to just going to the pet store and seeing a cute puppy and purchasing one. But I think it's a smart decision to look into it. And you have to determine what breed also works best for your lifestyle. Maybe a small dog is best if you live in a small apartment, also a larger dog. If you are a very active person, very athletic dog. Rescues are very, very good about finding dogs. Typically, you know, we don't have a huge stray dog population here in the Portland area. So most of the dogs that you're going to find in these local rescues are from other places. Some are coming from Puerto Rico. Some are coming from other states. A lot of them are coming from the southern states because they have larger stray dog populations down there. With respect to dog breeders, if you do your due diligence, you likely can find very qualified breeders that breed very healthy dogs and spend a lot of time researching the genetic makeup of their breed of dog that they breed and making sure that they're hopefully eliminating certain genetic problems that happen in certain breeds. That would be a responsible breeder. Then there's obviously the pet stores who may get their dogs from puppy mills and other places. So you just have to do your due diligence and research prior to just buying a dog offline or even adopting a dog offline.
Yeah, I think you can get really good dogs from both places. And I think just like what Kate was saying is you really have to do your due diligence and just make sure that you feel good about the dog that you're getting. And some people really do need a certain breed because, you know, their son's allergic or something like that, and they need a hypoallergenic breed or something like that. So there are a lot of good reasons to use breeders, but there's also a lot of good reasons to adopt if you can.
Is there a way to for a regular person to determine whether a good breeder is somebody who is doing all the right things?
Yeah, there's a lot of good resources online actually about questions to ask breeders to see, you know, how much they're doing for their animals. So, for example, you know, a German Shepherd breeder or something like that, do they x-ray their hips to make sure, you know, for both the male and the female, you know, are they going to have good hips? Are they going, and do they do certain tests like, you know, eye tests and things like that to really make sure that the genetic stock is good that they're using so that we don't see these kind of recessive gene sort of problems that can be so evident in certain breeds.
Haley, thanks so much for your question. We are going to take a quick break. When we return, more of your comments and questions about your pets. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Bar Harbor Chamber of Commerce, presenting Art in the Park on the Village Green in Bar Harbor, June 15th and 16th. Details at visitbarharbor.com.
Venezuela has reopened its main border crossing with Colombia, but it is still difficult for international agencies to bring in desperately needed food and medicine, so local charities have stepped up to help the country's needy.
No public organization or international organization are taking care of them.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. More from Venezuela this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered today from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Thinking about donating your used vehicle to Maine Public, doing so now through the end of June is a good time to do so. Not only will it be towed away for free and you could get a possible tax credit, but also our friends at Lee Auto Malls will also provide a $500 Lee certificate for use towards the purchase of any new or used vehicle at any Lee Auto Malls location around the state. For complete information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on the banner or click on the events drop-down. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, answers to your pet care questions. My guests today are all veterinarians. Megan Vaught is a criticalist at Maine Veterinary Medical Center. Deirdre Fry owns and operates Vet at Your Door. And Kate Domenico is with Cape Veterinary Clinic in South Portland. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We have an email from Jim. If a 6-year-old active dog is deemed positive for heartworm, but in a low-risk category, deemed so by Vet Association, no symptoms, caught by surprise in routine blood work. routinely been on heartworm prevention for the past 3.5 years when she was rescued from Louisiana, at which time she tested negative for heartworm. What course of treatment would you recommend? Can you comment on what is said to be the risky nature of treatment and possible long recovery from treatment?
There are a couple of ways you can treat heartworm. Generally, it's most recommended to do, it's actually 3 injections of, it's called imidacide, where you actually want to kill the heartworms. And it's very specific and a very detailed plan that you follow, according to the American Heartworm Society. And it, even if there are no symptoms, it can turn into something extremely dangerous. So just to get rid of it, I think, is the most important thing. So to really go, it seems like a big process to have to go through, but I still recommend going through it to really kill the worms once and for all.
All right. And the other veterinarians are nodding. We have a voicemail that came in before the program.
Hi, my name is Sarah from Buxton. I'm calling with a question about the best way to protect your dog from mosquitoes. We're heading up north this weekend, and I know the mosquitoes are really bad and ticks. And last year, when we had gone up, she was bitten within about 30 minutes and ended up with a huge rash on her underbelly. So I was just wondering if there's a best way to protect them. Thank you. Bye.
It's a great question. A lot of the prescription flea and tick preventative products that also kill fleas and ticks act as repellents for mosquitoes. So you just have to read the labels and talk to your veterinarian about which product is best for your pet.
Okay. This is related. A Facebook post from Graham. I would like to know if the permethrin spray that one uses for clothes, which is approved to use on a dog but not a cat, is okay to use on a dog, say, in place of an over-the-counter product named Actavil, which I understand is permethrin-based as well. Can you comment as to applying the Sawyer's permethrin spray that is a brand name product?
I don't know of that brand specifically, but I do know it's important as far as dose goes on how much you're giving. So you are correct that permethrin is very toxic to cats. They can have very severe neurologic problems. So sometimes if you have dogs and cats in the same household, it definitely is not a good idea to even spray your dog. However, the Actavil or whatever other products have the permethrin in it are very, they have certain doses, you know, so you can feel confident that it's based on weight, so you know that you're giving the right amount. So I probably would not necessarily spray just a generic permethrin spray, not knowing how much you're giving your dog.
Okay, we'll go to Abby calling from New Hampshire. Hi, Abby, go ahead.
Hi, I'm actually calling from South Portland, but thanks for taking my call. I'm calling, there is the Lyme disease vaccine now for pets. I'm just curious if that's something that is recommended as safe and how effective it really is.
It's a great question. There's different manufacturers of Lyme vaccine. I'm a little partial to one manufacturer over the other because I've seen some reactions across, you know, other brand Lyme vaccine. It is something that we're recommending for dogs that are exposed to ticks, which is most dogs, I would say, in Maine. Unless your dog really lives and uses doggy litter box in the house and doesn't get exposed to outdoors, I think it's also at risk for coming in contact with ticks, Lyme disease. So most dogs qualify as patients that would be recommended they have Lyme vaccine.
And while we're talking about vaccines, what about rabies vaccines? Recommended for every animal?
Yeah, and it's required by law in Maine. So that's been a big concern recently with some wildlife cases, which I'm sure people have seen on the news, where rabid fox, raccoon have approached people and they're trying to, you know, obviously get them away. And if your pet was exposed to these animals and they're not rabies vaccinated, it's a big concern. It's a deadly disease that we can easily prevent with a very inexpensive vaccine.
Is it required by law for indoor cats?
It is required by law for all dogs and cats.
All right, Abby, thank you for your call. We'll go to Janice in Owl's Head. Hi, Janice, go ahead.
Oh, hello, hi. We have a rescue dog, which we love. He's 7 months old, but right from the beginning, he is very attracted to his own poop and likes to eat it. And I don't know why, and I'm asking you if you know and how I can stop this habit.
That is a great question that is asked a lot. Dogs are gross sometimes. so a really good way, if it's that your dog is eating his own poop, there are certain things you can do. So raw pineapple can actually make their poop taste gross, apparently. Also meat tenderizer, if you put that on their food, that sometimes can help too. But if it's other dog's poop or deer poop or whatever it is, it really is just sort of avoiding the situation and teaching them how to have something in your hand that trumps whatever they're going to eat, like the poop. So you want to have like treats or something really good that they love to eat and be able to take them away from that if needed. And also leashing can also help too.
Okay. Well, Janice, thank you for your question. Thank you for having the courage to ask it. I'm sure other people have that question as well. We have an email from Dottie. There is a lot of brown tail moth activity around where I live, Camden, and I have seen some caterpillars on the ground where my dog wanders in the yard. Is she in any danger of inhaling the hairs from the moths and getting respiratory problems? What symptoms would I see, and how could this be treated?
I think those specific type of moths and caterpillars are probably not a huge deal, but certainly any, like we've talked about with allergies and things like that, any individual could certainly be affected by a specific antigen. So if you find that your dog is having, you know, congestion or discharge from their nose or more sneezing, those sorts of things, then they should probably just be reevaluated by their primary vet, and bring that up as a specific question. But most of the time, eating those bugs without it being something that we're actually treating the bugs with a pesticide, it's not going to cause significant problems.
An email from Susan. When my puppy was about 6 months old, we were at a friend's beach on a lake, and she unexpectedly and rather quickly ate enough sand to block her intestines. We ended up at the main emergency vet, and she was eventually okay, but FYI, this can be serious as the sand can block the GI tract.
Yes, it certainly can. You can become fully obstructed, and same with horses that eat a lot of sand and dirt. A lot of times with just supportive care and IV fluids, things will move along, but I have had dogs that had to have surgery to have that all kind of scraped out and emptied out of their stomach and their intestines. With enough distension, it can affect their cardiovascular system, and they can become very shocky.
So if you see your dog eating sand, don't just laugh about it. Go
right.
Make
have
them
a little
stop.
Giggle and then have them stop.
Okay, we'll go to Jim in Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a behavioral question about cats. I have a young cat, 3 years old, and an older lady, about 14. And recently, the older cat started not using its litter box. And up until this point, she's been fine. It's never been an issue. So my question is, do your guests have any advice on what we might be able to do to curb this behavior? Thank you.
Well, as cats, it's a great question. As cats get older, they may be becoming arthritic. So your older girl may be becoming arthritic and having trouble getting to the litter box. So if it's, for instance, downstairs, like in a basement or upstairs, and the cat spends a lot of time on a main level moving the litter box down, and also maybe cutting an opening into the box so that she doesn't have to step over the ledge. And so it may be a comfort thing. And also having her evaluated by your veterinarian to make sure that she doesn't need any medications for to help with arthritic pain.
All right. Thanks, Jim, for your call. An email from Lynn. Our dog is now 8 years old, but when she was about 4, she suddenly started losing her claws in very painful ways. After she was treated and bandaged, Dr. Robin Elms finally diagnosed her with a food allergy. We have since had her on a grain-free venison and sweet potato food from Hill's, but then she became allergic to that, so we switched to Hill's duck and potato food. So far, so good. It's been about 2 years on this food. If your dog has skin or claw issues, ask about this. How common is this?
Skin issues are very common. My guess is the infection was actually on the nail bed, which can sometimes make the nails fall out. That's what I think what they were referring to. So yes, they can absolutely have food allergies, and it's usually to the protein in the food. So either, you know, the chicken or beef are the big culprits. But yeah, sometimes moving to a novel protein that they haven't seen before can be very helpful in making their skin better.
An email from Lindy: I have two dogs that have both tested positive for Lyme disease in the past. Both did the antibiotic treatment. My vet said that once they have tested positive for Lyme, they will test positive thereafter. That being the case, why do they still say to test the dogs for Lyme disease every year? Also, how reliable is the Lyme vaccine for dogs and cats?
The tests, most of the tests that we do in-house that would only take a couple minutes to run are antibody-based tests. And so once your immune system's been stimulated to have that sort of infection like Lyme disease or anaplasma or Ehrlichia, those sorts of things, they typically will always come up positive. And if that's the case and it's the same infection, which would be the key part, if it's Lyme disease back-to-back, then and we're worried that they're clinically ill from it, a titer or a specific measurement of your immune system to give you a quantitative number is going to be more helpful than just a blue dot on the test.
So his question is, why does he have to keep getting it? And so his answer is it also tests for other things.
Yes.
And then also it can give you some, it's not just yes or no, but a measurement of how.
The measurement is a full blood test that we would submit to a lab typically, but those quick screening tests are just that for screening. But it tests for Lyme disease, Ehrlichia, anaplasma, as well as heartworm. And so it's a really helpful test to kind of just on the yearly make sure your dog is heartworm negative.
So one test, all four.
Correct.
I gotcha.
And then if you're coming up positive routinely, then we can do a bit more digging to find out, do you need to be treated again?
Her second question, Lynn, how reliable is the Lyme vaccine for dogs and cats?
I'd say it's probably, I think most of the data shows that it's about 70, 75% effective. So I think it's definitely worth, and then again, depending on which vaccine that it's being administered, with little risk. So I think that it's advantageous.
All right. An email from Joe. I have a 10-year-old cat who has really bad breath. The vet showed me he had redness on his gums and plaque on his HF teeth. Before they could put him to sleep to clean his teeth, I had to let them do a blood test due to a heart murmur they heard. Now they tell me he needs an ultrasound due to the blood test finding his heart enzymes being off. I can't afford the ultrasound, but I don't want him to be in pain from his teeth. He eats fine and doesn't seem to be sensitive to having his mouth touched. What can I do to help him with his dental issues?
Usually when dental disease is that far, where you're noticing the bad breath and seeing the red gums, the under anesthesia ultrasonic scaler procedure that is done is really best. And it sometimes does become, that's kind of the nature of medicine sometimes, is that, you know, once you sort of look somewhere, then you're going to find something else. And so I think your veterinarian is trying to advise, you know, the best course of action and the safest course of action. And I think with those risks, you just have to sort of make a decision on which is, you know, the lowest amount of risk for the most benefit. And that's something that you and your veterinarian, I'm sure, can speak together about.
We're going to take another quick break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about pets. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Nome Landscapes, dedicated to enhancing outdoor living in Maine with installation, design, masonry, and maintenance. NomeLandscapes.com.
Hi, this is Morning Edition co-host David Green, and the truth is, I don't even like cars, with one exception, the cars you guys donate to this station. Did you know that your old car can be turned into Morning Edition, All Things Considered, or Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? Kind of makes you like cars, doesn't it? Turn your car into the programs you love. Here's how to do it.
Visit mainpublic.org and click on support. And coming up at 2 o'clock, Maine Calling, its ideas from the CBC. Bunk debate, is China a threat to the liberal international order? At 2 o'clock, again right after Maine Calling, here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, advice for taking care of your four-legged family member. Joining me, three veterinarians. Dr. Kate Domenico with Cape Elizabeth Veterinary Care in South Portland. Megan Vaught with Maine Veterinary Medical Center. And Dr. Deirdre Fry with Vet at Your Door. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. I'm thinking, you know, you all went to veterinary school, studied really hard, and so many of the questions have to do with my dog ate this. That's just
every day.
That's right. So a Facebook comment from Carol. I have heard there is a possible link to lymphoma in dogs who have Lyme disease. If so, another reason to use tick control. Is that true?
I have not heard that specifically, but I think, you know, it's hard to know down the road what we are going to prove, you know, and I just think with all the horrible things that ticks can do to a body, I think it's definitely good to do the tick protection.
A tweet from Jim. We have two Minchins who bark a lot and have broken 3 shock collars from overuse. That's a whole tweet. I'm guessing he's wondering if you have any other ideas.
Yeah, I think at this point, you may want to consider speaking with a veterinary behaviorist or a trainer that might have some ideas about retraining them to respond to maybe the word quiet. It's just like any other learned skill in the dog. You can teach them to learn how to stop barking. It's just a very difficult one to embark on.
Oh, boy. We got Bess calling from Camden. Hi, Bess. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you. Could you address how to get medical insurance for your pet and how much that generally costs?
Sure. And are you talking about a dog or a cat, Bess?
A dog, yeah.
That's a great question. There's lots of different plans out there. More and more are coming up, I would say, every couple of months. There's a good website called, which I think is still up and running, but veterinarypetinsurance.com, I believe. And you can certainly, it has a review of all of the different plans of insurance. I don't advocate one over any others, but there's certain ones that will mostly cover like an 80% of an accident, kind of an accident insurance. Most insurance plans are not going to cover any wellness preventative care. They're going to be for if your dog has an emergency. If they need emergency surgery, for instance, or if they ate something and need to go to the emergency or to your regular veterinarian for treatment or diagnostics, and those plans will cover that. And so it varies based on your pet's age and any existing conditions. That's what's going to kind of doctor the fees.
And Megan, I'm guessing you've seen a lot of situations where there have been really tough decisions that have to be made, and that can help.
For sure. Yeah, it can be really hard, you know, certainly if you aren't expecting to have some major tragedy or emergency or they ate something silly to show up, and then not only the emotional standpoint of what's happening, but then to kind of have this major bill in front of you. And so we sometimes have these policies that can do pre-approvals, or at least you know that you have it on the back end that you're going to potentially get some return based on what your plan is. But it is very plan specific. And so some of them are more routine. Some of them are just emergency. And then there are certain caps and your deductibles and those sorts of things. But they can be very, very helpful.
Thank you, Bess, for your question. An email from Lisa. My 11-year-old dog, Bella, has always been a jumpy dog, but last year during a walk on the beach, she was suddenly T-boned by a huge German Shepherd who was running to catch a ball. Bella let out a fearful yelp, went flying up into the air, landed, and rolled several times. She was so scared and traumatized, she now seems to be scared of everything. It doesn't help that we got a puppy shortly after who is totally bonkers. We have tried Silkine and don't think it's really made much of a difference. Can you suggest anything else we can try so we have a happy, relaxed dog as she enters her golden years? Is Xylkine like doggy Xanax?
It's more of an herbal supplement, I believe, which can help. It can calm them. There are also other products called dog appeasing pheromone, for example, which is kind of mimics the mother giving off a pheromone to her nursing puppies, which sounds a little kooky, but they've actually done good studies on it, and it shows to help. And those are kind of non-medical things that you can do to try to help. But I think a lot of it will probably be just trying to encourage the positive behaviors and try to do as much positive sort of experiences as possible to just get them to bond, those two dogs, because it can take a while for them to get over something like that. But just to sort of keep things quiet. And if the anxiety gets to be too much, then, you know, talk with your veterinarian, and there might be some other ways to make it better.
An email from Sarah. I have noticed that my dog has developed a cough over the past year. It comes and goes. When we come inside and she gets excited, she will usually start to cough. Does this sound normal?
It's not necessarily normal. Some dogs, depending on what breed your dog is, if it's a smaller dog, they may have something called tracheal collapse. And when they get really excited or they're running around or they're kind of just in the right position, they can be more likely to cough. And that's it does tend to be progressive over time, but can be medically managed with your primary vet with cough suppressants. But it also can be related to heart disease or underlying primary respiratory disease. So it would be something that if you're finding that it is affecting their exercise tolerance and things like that, that they should be reevaluated.
Okay, we're going to go to Susan, who's calling from Cliff Island. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question and sort of a something to share. The sharing is I have used slippery elm for diarrhea along with a probiotic called Bacillus coagulans and chopped beef and rice. Works wonderfully all the time. And I just thought I would share that. I also, for about a year and a half, have been using an alternative to Frontline or Advantix and the other flea and tick remedies called Cedarside, which I think really works well. It's non-toxic. It's not a neurotoxin, as are the others. And my dog has not had fleas or ticks in that time, and apparently it kills mosquitoes on contact. I can't warrant that. But actually, my dog did have Lyme a couple of years ago on Frontline. And this seems to work. And the fact that it's non-toxic is very appealing to me.
Susan, thank you for your call. Cedarside, have you all heard about this?
I have not heard about this, and I can't speak to that. But I can speak to Frontline. The product has been around for many years, and we do see a lot of resistance of fleas and ticks to that product. People have applied it a couple days before, and I'll see their pet in cats and dogs covered with fleas. So I don't believe it's an effective product any longer.
Interesting. Thanks, Susan, for your call. John in Bristol, go ahead.
Hi there. I had my dog spayed at the recommended age, and unfortunately she developed incontinence. We tried diapers with her, but then she was getting UTIs, and we were given a medication called Proen for her, but it's made her so anxious that she hides under beds all day long. And I was wondering, is there anything else we might be able to do for her incontinence that won't make her so anxious?
Yes. So one thing you could try potentially is this kind of spade-related incontinence is you know, it definitely can happen. And the Proen can help with it. And it could be that the dose might be a little bit too high for her. So you could try decreasing the dose with your veterinarians, you know, talking with your veterinarian. There are also other medications that are in a similar class, but, you know, might work different or basically work differently in the body. So you could try those as well.
All right. Well, good luck to you, John. Facebook message with Scott. My niece's beloved dog has been diagnosed with dilated cardiac myopathy. In doing research on the subject, we've discovered this affliction may be connected to specialized dog food. Can you talk about DCM? Is it treatable? And is there truth to this connection to exotic dog food?
Yes, dilated cardiomyopathy can be very, very serious. Some breeds are intrinsically or in their genetics predisposed to developing this, but we are finding that more and more dogs that are not in that genetic group are developing dilated cardiomyopathy because of a taurine deficiency based on what's in the actual diet. So a lot of these grain-free diets that we're seeing are not well-balanced, even though they are claiming to be well-balanced. So depending on the specific grain-free recipe that's there, some of them that are, you know, potato-based are slightly better than other grain-free diets. But you should really speak to your veterinarian before starting any of those. It sounds like a good option for a lot of families, but we are seeing a lot of pets that should not be developing cardiomyopathy or even fulminant congestive heart failure at ages very, very young. I mean, even last week we had a dog that was less than a year old who was in congestive heart failure from DCM.
And was that dog eating one of these specialized
yes.
dog foods? Wow, that's scary. Linda, where are you calling from? Hello, Linda, are you there? Linda. Okay, we'll move on to Sandy in Belgrade. Hi, Sandy. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling about, I have a two standard-sized dachshunds, and one of them a year ago developed intervertebral disease, and I didn't understand what was happening until it had happened, and she couldn't move her back legs at all. And I couldn't afford surgery, and so I put in crate rest with anti-inflammatories and muscle relaxants and just did that for, and then after 2 weeks, she came back to, slowly back to normal. And I'd say now it's as though she never was paralyzed, although she was totally paralyzed in her back end before. My question is there anything I can do? About 6 months after that, it came back a little bit. I could tell she was getting weaker in her back end, and I put her back in the crate again, and she recovered. Is there anything I can do going forward to prevent her from having relapses, as it seems as though she's, susceptible to this? She's not overweight. She's a young dog. She's only 5. She's like 20. She's standard size, so she's standard bred. She's 25 pounds, I think. Anyway, is there anything you would suggest, like regular, any sort of medicine or maybe scheduled acupuncture, anything like that, that would help her not develop this again?
Yeah, you did everything perfect. I think if you're seeing any weakness or any discomfort, kind of taking a step back and letting them strictly be rested and try to let everything calm down is the best step. A lot of these dogs are very predisposed to having chronic disease, and that even though they aren't having a traumatic incident where they like jump off the bed or something like that, they can have very dynamic changes of those discs between their vertebral bodies. And so if you're seeing any of those things, I would do exactly what you did. Time to take a step back, have strict rest for a week or two. They may need medication depending on how severely they are affected, then slowly reintroduce them back into their normal routine. You could certainly try to see someone who does rehab and physical therapy and try to see if that helps with acupuncture and kind of building up their strength of their core and those sorts of things. That you may find that is a little bit helpful, but there are some dogs that just very, very chronically are dealing with these types of predispositions.
All right, Sandy, good luck to you and to your dachshund. We're going to try to squeeze in just one more question. An email from Sherry. What are the possible causes of bladder cancer? Is it possible that untreated cystitis could lead to this condition?
I have not necessarily heard that. However, there has been a link in certain breed dogs to ingesting fertilizers or being exposed to fertilizers that have been made as a link to a certain type of bladder cancer. So I'm sure that chronic cystitis or chronic infection in the bladder, which cystitis would be, it's the word cystitis means inflammation of the bladder, could potentially predispose to other bad changes.
All right. And that's going to be our last question today. Thank you all for joining us today. Deirdre Fry is here. She owns and operates Vet at Your Door. Megan Vaught at Maine Veterinary Medical Center. Kate Domenico at Cape Veterinary Clinic in South Portland, all veterinarians. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as all sorts of resources at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.